Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Right, I thought it would be remiss not in some way not to deal with the victory of Trump in the American election. But let me give a quote, which I will ask my colleague Nicholas Lorimer to respond to. Hi, Nick, how are you?
I'm good, and yourself?
Well, thank you. Here's the quote. There is indeed a kind of mass insanity afoot. The Free Press reported this week that Georgetown and Missouri State Universities, and no doubt the other educational institutions where the young are being readied for the rigors of everyday life, centers have been set up to help students cope with post-election stress and trauma. The one program included mindfulness exercises, self-guided meditation, playing with Lego, filling in coloring books, and, of course, milk and cookies to soothe the troubled souls of the fattest generation since the dawn of time. The Guardian, standard bearer of left politics, responded to the effects on its UK staff as of a, quote, very upsetting, close quote, result that could, quote, reverberate for a million years by organizing a 24/7 online GP and various virtual well-being tools. It's shattered US and Australian staff have similar programs offering, quote, professional counseling. This kind of progressive, infantilizing and grievance-driven identity politics has become the norm in much of the West, but in the United States and Britain especially. Now, these immortal words were written by William Soderson Mayer in his most recent article for Politics Web. Nick, it's one thing to be disappointed that your side didn't win an election, but there is, to my mind, certainly an element of complete derangement syndrome as regards Trump in the, certainly in among some of the elites, the like of which I'm not sure we've ever seen, except perhaps the first time he was elected.
Yeah, it's all a bit silly, isn't it? It sort of speaks to a kind of political culture that seems to particularly be in campuses, on campuses, where you know, you get people reacting with this kind of completely over the top sort of hysteria. Even if you think, you know, that Trump is one of the worst American presidents, or that his presidency will do a lot of harm, it's kind of completely ridiculous for adults in you know, important institutions to have to go and have sort of cuddle sessions and therapy sessions and deal with this as though it's the same thing as a breakup or a beloved relative dying. It also speaks to the fact that these places are not really engines of driving kind of political conversation in the same way. They're not, you know, you can't expect a thoughtful and considered response to Trump coming out of these institutions, which is what's going to be necessary for his opponents if they actually want to, you know, erase his legacy.
I mean, one of the things that strikes me more than anything, particularly given the fact that he won the Electoral College vote, he also won the popular vote, which he didn't do last time, and he took all of the swing states, I mean, all of them. Surely this is a time for the Democratic Party to sit back, perhaps with an almond latte collective, and actually reflect on what they did wrong that allowed Trump to attract votes in greater number from minorities and the sort of people that ostensibly the Democratic Party should have as supporters, but I think increasingly they've literally drifted away from mainstream working class and ordinary middle class Americans.
Yeah, you're sort of seeing three responses, I think, to the election of Trump amongst the American Democrats. The first is a sort of, I think this one is best characterized by Barack Obama's response, which is a sort of, well, you know, the inflation was bad. It's not our fault. No one could have done anything. Every, you know, incumbent in the world is losing at the moment. So tough luck. We did as well as we could have. But at the end of the day, the tide was against us and there's nothing we could do differently. Then you've got the what I might call the Maxine Waters. She's a representative from California response, which is to kind of light your hair on fire and say that America has proven itself to be inherently evil and irredeemable by this election. She said that the only way that you can explain this is because of racism and sexism. And then you've got the more thoughtful response from people like Matt Iglesias, who's a writer and sort of, you know, one of these pundit types on the American left, who is basically saying, okay, well, what's the program that we could move forward with to rebuild our coalition so that we can get our ideas implemented next time? What things should we cut? What ideas should we abandon? What excesses should we move away from? And also, how do we understand the culture and the environment that got us to this point? And I think it's going to be very interesting to see what happens in the US over the next couple of years to see what the which of those sort of three narratives triumphs, right? You've essentially got status quo, you've got reform, and then you've got panic. And I think after 2016, panic in a lot of ways won. And there was this embrace of, you know, of this, the what we kind of usually call colloquially woke politics, which really got turbocharged in Trump's first term. And it was kind of almost by accident or sort of by a narrow thing that Biden running on the on a less woke ticket in 2020 actually managed to kind of steer the Democrats away from that platform, whereas all of his opponents within the party seem to be charging down the progressive far left woke lane of Democrat politics, believing that that was where the future of the party and the country lay. It turned out very quickly after Biden's election that, you know, he wasn't exactly sticking so closely to that the way he sold himself during the election. But I think the fundamental ground in American politics has probably shifted, and I think there's no guarantee that the American left will react to this Trump election in the same way they did to the last one. I mean, apart from the inevitable campus whinging that you described in that first quote you read out.
I mean, what from a domestic politics point of view, I mean, they really seemed that Trump was elected for the reasons that people usually are elected. Of the candidates, he seemed the one who would most likely deal appropriately with the economy. You've got people who have experienced increased cost of living. Even if the economy has done well, inflation has really knocked people. Housing is an issue. It's not, and in the sense, was not that immigration was a problem, but that illegal immigration and the nature of some of the immigration that had just been allowed to spill into, literally, virtually spill into the United States. They were largely bread and butter issues, you know, about having the wherewithal to actually make existing voters' lives better. And that seems to be literally the sort of bread and butter type element of elections that the Democrats just didn't tap into.
Yeah, you know, American elections in recent years have been very close. Even this one is going to probably end up being quite close, where when all the votes are counted, and that's still happening right now, Trump will probably have only won the popular vote by, I don't know, maybe 1 or 2 percentage points. And so essentially you've got kind of 2 or 3% of people sort of sloshing back and forth between the two parties. And those voters almost always tend to be voters who are very keen on these bread and butter issues, voting on, you know, concerns around inflation, that sort of thing. And in a lot of ways, Harris, although I think despite the fact that she was vice president, which is usually not a very powerful position, she really suffered from the sheer incompetence of Biden's government in dealing with two big issues. One was inflation, where, you know, economists will argue until the end of time about how much the policies of the Biden administration either contribute to or alleviated inflation. But one of the very big mistakes they made was an enormous amount of just kind of annoying, insulting, whistling past the graveyard messaging. The Biden administration sort of initially responded to the rising inflation by saying that it was not really happening, it wasn't a big deal. And then the response changed to, okay, no, actually, it's a problem, but it's temporary. And they sort of just continued to refuse to admit that this was an issue that they needed to kind of respond to properly. Likewise, on the American southern border, there was a very large influx after COVID of people mostly from Central America, so not so much from Mexico, but actually from south of that country, looking for economic opportunities and abusing loopholes in the asylum-seeking system to try and get into the United States. And likewise, the Biden administration was very slow to respond to this issue. Eventually, they actually mostly did respond to it, and in fact, they instituted some of the immigration policies of the Trump administration of previous years. But by the time they had sort of gotten more to grips with it, the public had lost had lost faith in them, in their ability to actually control immigration issues like that. And when you look at post-election surveys of what people said was most important to their vote, the things that are highest on the list are people saying things like inflation was not dealt with properly by the Biden and Harris administration, and too many immigrants illegally crossed the border under the Biden-Harris administration. Those were overwhelmingly the most important issues to a lot of voters.
The other thing, of course, was notwithstanding that Donald Trump was facing a huge number of criminal charges from criminal charges that ended up in court, and notwithstanding the fact that he does not have the greatest reputation as being respectful of women, and there's a case regarding that as well, and he was literally came under attack from elements of the governing bureaucracy. He's not a terribly appealing figure, it has to be said, and he's very difficult to predict, and he's not a party man. He's a maverick in every sense of the word. But the whole way in which the Democrats fooled themselves or pretended to fool themselves or whatever they were doing regarding Biden's increasing incapacity and allowing him to hit the point where most ordinary observers would have seen really a year or more ago that the man was struggling, very late stage, as a result of the presidential debates, he was out, Kamala was in, and the Democrats actually just weren't sort of strategically ready to fight the election at that point.
Yeah. There's already been an interview done with who was formerly a very important Democrat, Nancy Pelosi. She used to lead the party in the House of Representatives. You know, her star is starting to fade now. She's quite old and she's kind of withdrawing from politics but she still has a lot of influence amongst the Democrats behind the scenes. And she essentially revealed what happened in the aftermath there, which was that there was pressure on Biden from within the Democrats to drop out of the presidential race. This was a pressure he resisted. He sort of boldly blundered ahead. And then it became apparent that he just was not able to do a second term when he did that debate, a debate which he called for, presumably thinking he himself was in a position with which to defeat Trump on the debate stage, which turned out to not be the case. He kind of left it so late that he sort of humiliated himself. I think the election would have looked very different if Biden had announced, maybe at the end of 2023, I'm not actually running for president again. That would have really changed the calculus. And the Democrats had actually hoped to hold a very quick sort of internal party primary where they would have a whole bunch of candidates fight it out. But Biden closed the door on that to some degree by endorsing Kamala Harris out the door. I remember the sequence of events. He announces he's withdrawing from the race in a tweet, I think it was. I don't think they even put out a statement yet on the White House website. Then there was about 20 to 30 minutes of silence while everyone reacted to this. And suddenly he tweets out, and I'm endorsing Kamala Harris. And one wonders, you know, that was kind of one of those moments I think that history may have turned somewhat, is what discussions were had in the White House at that point and why they decided to endorse Kamala. I suppose in many ways it was because Biden thought it was the only way to protect his legacy and also to put his finger in the eye of the Democratic establishment for forcing him out. Because they had put a lot of pressure on him behind the scenes to drop out of the presidential race. And so I think Biden has a very big part to play in why the Democrats just were not able to respond to Trump properly. And I will say, you know, I'll put my cards on the table and say that I think there's some substance in quite a few of those court cases against Trump, and in the case against him. But it doesn't, in a sense, it didn't cut through, partly because the Democrats and their allies had lost so much credibility on some of these other issues that they weren't able to message well. Because when they said, oh, Trump's doing X, Y, or Z, there had been so much of that kind of stuff that had been done inaccurately in years before that when they actually had something to kind of push on, there was, people just didn't really believe it. They said, well, you know, we've heard this all before from you guys.
Yeah, but wasn't that also the fact that they sort of were so unsubtle, they threw so much at him that he started to look like a victim? I mean, Donald Trump,
right, of all that was part of it. And I think that especially within the Republican primary, because of course Trump had to win control of the Republican Party again himself, was a very big help. But I think he really just benefited from the fact that there was just so much noise and sound and fury around him that particularly those voters who don't pay a lot of attention, the ones who tend to make up the majority of swing voters, it was just kind of, there was no sort of attack on him that it could ever land, because there was just so much, everything had been turned up since 2015, 2016, so much noise had been directed in his direction. That people just kind of ignore it all. It's like, oh, well, you know, there's people getting upset about Trump again. What's new? And that was a big mistake. I think in many ways the Democrats were suffering from their over-enthusiastic and often not very clever attacks on him in 2016 and 2017, which often went way ahead of what he had actually done yet. And so that when Trump did something that was genuinely really bad, like his actions in the lead up to January 6th and the American election in 2020, they had sort of numbed everyone to negative messaging on him, to the point where, you know, he kind of became even more Teflon than he already was.
American elections generally are very little about foreign affairs and very much about local conditions. But to what extent did the Biden administration seeming appeasement of heavies like Iran and, you know, sort of their haphazard or spotty support of Ukraine, and they're very often seen as lame response to Israel for and against and backwards and forwards. To what extent would that seeming lack of influence, lack of power, which is, you know, the great American global policeman power, would have played into the choice to go for Trump?
So I think there was definitely a role it played. If you ask American voters, you know, do you care about foreign policy? Do you care about the Biden administration's view on Iran or Ukraine or any, pick your global conflict? Majority of people will not rate it as particularly important or super interesting to them, or, you know, their kind of their response is colored by their, you know, partisan leanings. But if you actually dig down into it, I think there's a lot that American voters kind of judge their presidents on. And Biden's whole selling point in 2020 was, I am returning the country to normalcy. Trump is a weird guy. He runs the government by tweeting. He constantly is causing drama and chaos all over the place. He disrespects the office, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm going to return competence and adult politics to the country. Then the Afghanistan withdrawal happened. And it was a total and utter disaster. And I think, although if you ask a lot of voters sort of off a list, you know, how important was it, they won't say it was important. I think that that was key in destroying Biden's theory for himself and the Democrats. Because this was a monumental mess up.
snafu,
the kind of which you can't really come back from. And that just created the perception that these guys are incompetent. That, you know, Biden waltzes around saying he's going to do this or that, and he's returning normalcy and all that, but actually he doesn't know what he's doing. And likewise on many of these other foreign policy things, he kind of won no friends. He supports Ukraine against Russia very aggressively at first, but then he starts to kind of taper off things, and he keeps putting arbitrary restrictions on the Ukrainians, and lots of people who are supporting Ukraine go, well, you know, do you actually have a strategy? And it's clear he didn't. When it comes to Israel, he's full of extremely critical rhetoric, and he's telling the Israelis, trying to micromanage the Israelis' campaigns, saying, no, you can't go into this part of Gaza, but you can go into this part, but you can't do this, and you can't use this bomb, and you can't use this. But then he's also supplying them with weapons the whole time. And then, you know, with Iran, it's we must criticize Iran and control it and prevent it from striking Israel. So we'll put together a big regional coalition to defend Israel from Iranian attacks of missiles. But at the same time, we will try and prevent Israel from striking Iran back. And this kind of, oh, clever by half, you know, trying to manage everything and massage everything just kind of ended up really making no one happy and achieving nothing. And so while foreign policy per se, I don't think played a big role in the election, I think the perception of the Biden administration is essentially being, incompetent and not strong, kind of wavering, definitely hurts him. If he had taken a stronger position on kind of any of those issues and really made the issue his, I think he would have gotten a lot more political hay out of it. And the Democrats in general, even if it wasn't Biden, you know, Harris could have tried to run on some of his record, which he had to run away from the whole election. And Biden kept humiliating Harris throughout the election. She was desperately trying to distance herself from his campaign. And yet the entire time Biden was doing things like saying, oh, yeah, no, we made all the decisions together and she was a key part of my administration and things like that, even as her campaign was behind the scenes telling him to shut up. At one point, apparently, the Trump campaign team was even saying that Biden was their greatest surrogate on the campaign trail.
Yeah, I mean, for all his faults, Trump does give an impression of being relatively decisive and firm on the foreign policy side. And it's ironic, in fact, that the decision to withdraw from Afghanistan fell under his administration, but Biden carried it out and, as you say, did so disastrously. Just another question, perhaps more, not even related so much to this this election, but what will happen, what we're looking at in 5 years' time, in 2029, is... I imagine a bit like here, you'll have the old guard pretty much passing on, dying out, retiring. And it looks like on both parties, Democrats and Republicans, you're going to get a much younger, newer, fresher, and possibly all-round smarter bunch of politicians. Is that a future we're likely to be looking at?
Well, I will say that the Republicans had a very strong field in 2016, and then no one saw Donald Trump coming, really, to take over the party. So I agree with your assessment, but I also think that it's very possible that something quite unexpected could happen too. But yes, it really does look like this, in a way, is a kind of passing of the torch. Trump and Biden were both old guys. Harris is not as old as Trump, but, you know, she was 60, which is actually sort of slightly towards the older end of American presidents. And I think that very much the Democrats have a crop of younger people who will definitely take the thing forward. There's a bunch of swing state governors, people like Josh Shapiro. There's progressive favorites like Pete Buttigieg. And others who are sort of emerging throughout the country, particularly in the role of governors or senators. We also are seeing the Republicans will have a bit of a sort of vacuum within themselves, which is that this is Trump's last rodeo, right? He can't be president again. Does he remain the central point of a Republican politics going forward? We don't really know. Does J.D. Vance, his vice president, kind of inherit his mantle and carry the torch forward? We don't know. Is Donald Trump Jr. going to try and run his own presidential campaign in the next cycle? We don't know. Or is something new going to happen? It all really, I think, depends a lot on how the Trump administration goes and how Americans respond to it. And there are a lot of questions that we still just don't know the answer to. So it's, I think it's still a very long way ahead, but I definitely think that there will be some sort of shift of the paradigm in the U.S.
Well, Nick, the next 5 years should at least be interesting, if nothing else. Thank you very much for coming on today.